Hello and welcome back to the Let's Backflip Show. Happy hour. I'm Ryan Fring, co-creative director here at Backflip and Lord of the Podcast. That's right. We're going to keep doing intros because I think it might add a little bit of context because it's written in the description, but not in my actual live stream intro. So we'll keep going. We'll keep doing it. This week, we're hanging with Emily Shea. That feels right. She's a partner and executive creative director at SMB Strategic Marketing. Stephan and Brady, where she leads a group of writers and designers toward effective solutions for clients. We've worked with her on various projects through the years and with maybe AAF Madison and Silver Medals and all of those things. So she's an awesome boss lady, and it's just real great to get somebody's perspective who's been in the industry for a while. So this is a real fun chat, hanging out with industry folk again. If you don't already, please do like, subscribe, follow. Do all the things. We're everywhere your podcasts are sold. We're in Apple, Google, Spotify, Stitcher, I don't know. We're in everything. We're in a conglomerated, is that work? We're in a distributed platform, so it goes everywhere. So wherever you are, that's where we are. If you don't mind leaving us a review, we can read that, and it can help us to make the show better, and other people can see it too to see if they like the show or if they might like the show or not. So that would be super helpful if you want. Otherwise, just enjoy, grab your favorite libation. We appreciate you being here. And let's get going with episode 78 with Emily Shea. Hello and welcome back to the Let's Backflip Show Happy Hour. I'm Ryan Fring, one of the co-creative directors here at Backflip, and I'm excited because we're back. It's been a little bit of a break due to so many things, but we're back. And as always, I'm joined by my pal, my confidant, my other co-creative director, John Shoemaker. Say hey, John.
Hello. Hey, John.
Hey, I'm looking at you. It never gets old.
Figured out now that we know which way the mirror goes.
Right. Well, now you're just frozen on my screen, so it doesn't really matter. Yeah, it doesn't matter if you're frozen or not. If you raise your right arm, I don't see anything. There you are. You're back. So we do like to start off before we bring our guest on, just mentioning what we have to drink. Actually, that's weird now that I'm thinking about it. Let's do this. Let's bring our guest on and then we'll talk about what we're drinking. It'll be great. Here we go. So I'm bringing on Emily Shea. Welcome, Emily. Did I say that right? I've never said your last name.
It's Shea, actually.
So. Shea.
Yeah.
I was terrible. There we go. No, Emily Shea.
That's totally cool.
Thank you so much for coming on. So this is a happy hour. We do like to start off by talking about what we're drinking. We briefly talked about it before. Emily and I both like to have a lot of different things, a lot of different options. So I've got water. I've actually got this hop water, which is really, really good. It just kind of tastes beer-y. Tastes like hops in sparkling water. And then it's got adaptogens and nootropics, which I think are just a hip, fun name for
sci-fi
mushrooms or something. I don't know. So I got that. And I got this guy. This guy is a magical beer right here. Pineapple Snowbird. This is by Carbon 4. Do we have our name on there? There we go. Backflip.
Nice.
By Carbon 4 and Backflip.
Very nice.
So we made a beer this year, which is really cool.
Tell me about it. What does it taste like?
Yeah, so this is a Hefeweizen with coconut and pineapple. Wow. We wanted something that was super drinkable. So it's not super sweet, but it has a little bit of that, almost like a light sweet Belgian, like an orange bell, like a Blue Moon or something like that. Just slightly different flavors. And then it's a Hefeweizen. So you kind of have those, what is that, kind of more wheat-esque flavor. But we wanted something that was super drinkable and made you think of summer.
Yeah, it sounds like vacation right in a can there.
Exactly.
I like it.
So that's what I got. John, what do you got?
Yeah, I just gave it away. I couldn't stop myself from taking a little drink of Karuba coffee from Quick Trip. We were out this morning and I ended up working at home and, it's like, oh no. So my wife graciously went in and got some coffee. And then, I haven't opened it yet, but I will. So I actually have a non-alcoholic beer here from Athletic Brewing Company called...
I think we're getting old. Our level of drinking has gone down a lot.
Okay. I'm kind of doing...
I'm okay with it.
I'm kind of doing Dry January, but I'm just cheating as much as I feel like to. Because I'm like, it's not Lent. I'm not treating it like Lent. First, I was like feeling like really bad. You know, and I was like, no, I'm just like... Good to have a little, you know, reset. Okay. Enough of that tangent. Athletic Brewing Company, Run Wild. This is their IPA. And holy cow, is it good. Like, it's just like I had tried a couple of their different beers, and I had like a dark one. I forget what the name of that one was. And that one was like, you're like, okay, this is like the decaf coffee, you know, it's like, yeah. It's kind of the thing, but it's not the thing. The IPA.
An NA Pilsner would be the worst.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The IPA is like, you're like, what is it that they did? Like, it tastes like an IPA, and it's a good IPA. So, yeah, that's what I got.
That's fun.
Yeah, those NA beers have come a long way.
Yeah.
I remember right, when Emily. Like, the options were O'Doul's.
Oh, my gosh. O'Doul's. I've had those, too. Yeah.
I think that's kind of the Pilsner you're talking about. Okay. Okay. Yeah, so, I am not imbibing either yet. Maybe later. Quite I don't know. Yet. But right now, I have delicious coffee from Cafe Domestique. I don't know if you're familiar. It's about a block away from our office on Lily Street. Yeah. It's a fantastic little coffee shop. Attached to a bike shop. I mean, how much more Madison can you get?
Yeah.
Is and that, then I'm bagging.
I think we did a coffee class there.
Did you? A tasting, like a cupping, like one of those cupping things?
Yes. Yep.
Yes.
Exactly.
Those are fun. Yeah.
And we learned how to learn how to make fancy lattes.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah.
And then I bought us an espresso, so we didn't have to try hard.
Oh, there you go. The I'm not big into like the lattes and like the, you know, like I can just like my coffee black, maybe a little splash of cream, but they do some really inventive things over there with their lattes. They're not your standard, you know, just sugary syrup things. Like they have rosemary, like there's a drink they had a while ago with rosemary in it. So like really interesting, but
things. If you get away from the Starbucks mentality, because you go to Starbucks and they're like, here's the Karma Frappa Latte, you know, just all the sugar and some milk and maybe a little splash of really bad coffee. If you get away from that, you realize it's just like cooking other food. It's like you could have a shot of espresso and a bunch of water, or you could have a shot of espresso with a little water and a little bit of milk. And, you know, there's Italian names for all these things, but then you can get really inventive and throw some rosemary in there, I don't know, eucalyptus in there. I don't know if you could consume that. It was just another spice that I could think of. Yeah.
Adaptogens.
Very fragrant.
Adaptogens and nootropics.
Yes, all those things. I'm backing that up with water. So that's super exciting. But hydration is key. So like we were talking about, Ryan, at any given time, I think you'll find a good three beverages going on my desk. It's a problem.
Like options.
Yeah. I like options. Yeah.
Yeah. No, as long as you have a bathroom available, you know, drinking water and things are good for us.
Well, cheers, you guys.
Yeah. Cheers. Thanks for coming on.
You have to hold them all up though. All of
them. I only have three today. Sometimes I have five. You mentioned you have a bar cart to your right.
I do.
You've never used. How come you've never used that? What's the story behind that?
I don't know. I thought it would be cool to have a bar cart in my office. If I didn't have a messy desk, I'd turn my camera around and show you. But yeah, we got this really cool bar cart. We got some glassware and some bottles on there, and I've used it zero times. I mean, we'll have happy hours in the office, then we all go to the kitchen. Mm-hmm. But I thought maybe we'd be like go old school. It's like I don't know. I just don't have the time.
Yeah, no, it's my favorite clients to come in. So I've got this.
Yeah.
And I just have that ready because they're like, all right, what are we having today? And I'm like, yes, this is how our relationship works.
Good start.
What you have to start doing is anytime you invite somebody into your office for a meeting and they come in, the first thing you do, you just don't say anything and you just walk over and you like clink the ice into a glass, you pour a whiskey or whatever, and then you start the meeting. It's a power move.
That'd be great, especially if it's an employee.
Yeah. My favorite part about that is like your demeanor when you did that. It was all like sort of like cool and chill and slow. Like,
yeah, nice. I love it.
Yeah, especially depending on who it is, you know, they walk in and you're like, oh, you're gonna need this here. This is gonna be hard. Great job on the work that you've done. Yeah, so we've caught up a little bit, but I think it's important to kind of just give a little bit about who you are and what you do for those people who are tuning in and don't know you. And we are live as well. So if you guys have questions, comments, thoughts, throw those in the chat. We'll get to them. But I'll turn it over to Emily to give us a little bit more about who she is.
Yeah, so I am a partner and the executive creative director at SMB Strategic Marketing in Madison, Wisconsin. I've been doing this for a long time, a number of years, but essentially, you know, my role here is to work with our strategy team to establish marketing strategies, you know, just running through, you know, what it is we want to achieve, tying business objectives to what we're doing. And then I work with our creative team of writers and designers and others that we call in to help clients achieve those objectives. And we are a super small but mighty team here. Everybody's, it's kind of like all hands on deck all of the time. We're always doing something new. We're never settling for the same old, same old. We don't like it that way. So it's super exciting. It's never a dull moment, that's for sure.
Yeah, what was kind of your path to get here? Have you always been in advertising?
I have been for a really long time. Interestingly enough, I've always been in marketing. I started out actually doing corporate public relations for what was at the time Gillette Stationery Company. They handled the Parker Pen and Waterman brands of pens. And then we also did liquid paper. So that was interesting. So
handling, is that like whiteout liquid paper?
Like whiteout, yeah. But this was like the actual liquid paper that, you know, like a little known fact, and remember this for trivia, was invented by, do you know who Michael Nesmith is? The Monkees wore the hat.
Recently
passed away. His mother invented that. So
weird.
Yeah. So yeah, I started out there, and then, you know, I enjoyed it, but I wanted to try something different, and I ended up at a small graphic design firm that doesn't exist anymore, and really got a chance to do so many different things. Really learned everything from, you know, the basics of design and using, you know, art to communicate with people and connect with people in order to achieve business objectives. That's where I got started doing a lot of copywriting. I did go to school at Wisconsin and majored in journalism, so I do have a strong writing background. I also majored in French, which I think helped a lot too, and continues to help to this day, even though I don't speak much French anymore.
How does that play in?
Well, you know, one of the things I think that studying a foreign language, especially at that level, helps you do is really just understand an appreciation for language. And a lot of the French writers that I studied just took such great care to make sure that every word worked as hard as it could. And I think the difference between, you know, English and a language like French is we have so many more words in our vocabulary than they do in French. And so we've got a lot more words at our disposal, but, you know, you have to be a lot more, we can just throw a bunch of stuff out into word salad and somebody's going to get what we're saying, right? But in French, you just have to be so focused. And I think that's really helped, you know, from from an advertising writing perspective where less is more, right? So that's been really interesting. But yeah, so I worked there. Yeah, I did everything, like learned about the printing process and how to, you know, do estimates and basic business stuff, you know, everything.
And is that in Madison or Wisconsin or somewhere
else? It was in Madison. Yeah. It was owned by a husband and wife who decided they wanted to do something else. And then I started on more of a traditional advertising path. I worked as a copywriter at a few different agencies here in town, ultimately ending up at Stephan & Brady, I believe, 17 years ago now. So, yeah. And so it was a much different agency when I started. And, you know, throughout the years, you know, a group of us sort of coalesced and, you know, kind of took on leadership of the next generation. And we're now really kind of changing and shaping a new future, which is super exciting. Beyond just the client work that we do every day, that's super exciting. Sure. You know, it's just kind of molding this business. We're going to celebrate our 75th anniversary this year, but it's totally different now than it was then. Yeah. You know, like it's changed so dramatically, and we're really excited to be part of that change.
Well, that's awesome. Are you going to have a rad party for the 75th?
I don't know that we're going to have a rad party
in these COVID times.
We are going to have a rad party because we intended to have a rad party last year because we just moved to a new office space. I think you guys were invited to that. And then we had to like pull the plug because there was another COVID surge. So,
And you guys moved from like a literal World War II bunker or Vietnam bunker or something.
We did. It was such a crazy space for anyone who hasn't been there. Yeah. It was a missile tracking station. Over by the airport by Truex Field. Mm-hmm. It was crazy. We thought long and hard about staying there versus moving. There was something kind of quirky and cool about the space. Sure. I kind of always would walk in and reimagine it. Like what if we could just do this sort of Cold War, like just really embrace its history, like Cold War meets Wes Anderson vibe, like, and just really kind of work that. I thought that would be super cool. But at the end of the day, it was just like way more space than we needed. And it was by the airport, you know, there's nothing there. We wanted to be someplace that had, you know, a little bit more dynamic atmosphere and like where we could walk to get a cup of coffee.
Go out and get some coffee. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
The image you could put forward though, as a French journalist at an ad agency in a missile tracking station. I mean, there's a lot going on right there.
That's pretty Wes Anderson in and of itself, isn't it?
Yeah. Build a character. Did you bring any of that into the new space?
No, we didn't.
That would have been amazing.
We didn't. We kind of went a little bit of a different direction. Our new brand from a look and feel, I'd say, is a little bit more sophisticated. It does kind of harken back to
a Cold War bunker.
I mean, it harkens back a little bit historically, but to a different, it's a little more like there's some Art Deco elements to our brand. Yeah. But I also think that at the same time, it's very, very current, very modern. So we did not bring any of it over.
Well, there's always an opportunity down the road to have the missile bunker conference room or, you know.
100%. We could always bring some of that in. Maybe we can brainstorm some of that for 75th anniversary.
Yeah. Well, and that was something I wanted to mention too, like 75th anniversary and you even starting 17 years ago, you survived and the company survived like major change in advertising, social media, digital, you know, kind of our, well, let's see how we can communicate to people. Or what we communicate to people is still the same, but how we
doing it right now
changed a lot. Yeah, pretty terribly. Yeah. So how we do it is different. What we do is largely the same. But I think that's pretty awesome because we got into production about 15 years ago because people couldn't make the change from more traditional giant production, expensive cameras. You know, like DPs had to mortgage their houses to get the cameras that they needed. And so you weren't shooting commercials unless you were paying, you know, $15,000 for a director for a day.
Right.
Do commercials unless you did that. And, you know, you're spending $100,000 just to get into the commercial game. We are able to sneak in with the technology, and there were companies that went away. And, you know, you see that as technology changes and communication changes. But what was that like? Because you said 17 years. So was it 2005 you came to SMB?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. So then 2006 through 8 was maybe when Facebook kind of landed. And I don't know what advertising was like on Facebook back then, but that's kind of when social media started taking over people's lives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's been interesting, but you know, if anything, that experience, you know, all of us who went through it and adapted and changed and survived and thrived, that's kind of what we do now with everything, you know, that's just kind of how we work. So it's kind of instilled this sense of always having to be inventive and a little bit scrappy and figuring stuff out, right? So I think it's all been good. But yeah, it was different for a long time. And there was a bit of a learning curve, not just for us to get there, but then, you know, trying to bring our clients along on that learning curve, I think was one of the difficult things. Because you're right, Ryan, I agree 100%. Like, the what we're doing hasn't changed, but how we're doing it has changed. And I think, you know, and mm-hmm. as things moved from this sort of analog to digital, whether it be, you know, video production or, you know, even like moving things that were traditionally print to digital. And then even in the last few years, you know, bringing events, you know, virtual, I think that the thing of it is you do have to think about things a little bit differently. I think that was really, really difficult. Mm-hmm. And I think that getting people out of that sort of 30-second construct and how that always has to work and the formula that, you know, it's that it doesn't follow the same formula. You really do have to think about things digitally. And I think that that was one of the things. And I think we used to produce things like way back in the day for the lowest common denominator of any given target audience, right? Because we had one shot at this big broadcast or this big, you know, publication that you're putting an ad in. So you had to kind of do something, and there was a lot of cost involved, right? So you had to do something that was, you know, everything to everyone. And we all know that that's just impossible. Well, now we have the ability to really target what we're doing in a way we never have before. So kind of shifting that mentality from communicating with the lowest common denominator to really breaking up your target audiences and talking to them in the way that means the most to them and really, really slicing and dicing that, that it took a while to get there. But once you get there and you can demonstrate the results, that ladder up to the objectives, I mean, people are like, all right, you got it. This is great, you know, and then everything was wonderful. So yeah, but what's the next change going to be, right? Like, where are we going to have to go tomorrow? Like, that's just the thing. It's whenever you think you have it figured out, there's going to be some variable that switches. So you got to be ready to jump on that.
Yeah. And I'm super curious about that too. Cause right now we have just new apps, you know, like certainly Instagram, Snapchat, they kind of get us using devices in different ways. TikTok, right? It's all different than Facebook, which was kind of like the godfather of these things, because I don't think anybody advertises on MySpace. But right now, it's all within the same realm of things, whereas Facebook was a new realm. So I'm curious, like what you're saying, what's going to be a new realm? Like weird ass VR? Like, are we going to return to, like, you know, somebody walking on, like, in your VR space? Like, hi, you know? I'm weird. Ryan, and, you know, I'm drinking hop water because, you know, to the 1920s of just direct ads with your celebrity or, you know, whatever cyclical. It is.
We just go back. To me, I actually think it's interesting in that conversation to think about how, like, it feels like this isn't a new thing, but when you really think about the amount of years that this space has been, you know, in existence, it is new, like, especially right. digital, but, and I'm even including like TV, like before the pre-internet, just anything that, so that would be analog, but, like film isn't that old, you know, and then video itself isn't that old, like images coming to people, you know, through screens, however you get there, is not that old. And so I often think a lot about the messaging, like the medium will certainly change, you know, whether it's VR or, you know, could be Neuralink. We just go straight to the brain, but, yes. The method will change, but the messaging and the communication, like that is also a thing that changes, because the audiences of old, like audiences wise up, you know, each generation is like, oh, I see, I get it. The commercials were convincing me to buy these things and I don't want, you know, whatever. Like you kind of get used to the advertising and then you start ignoring it or pushing it away. And so like today's challenge, the way I feel it, is that it's all like very wise consumer audience that knows what's going on. And so you have to be far more genuine. You have to be like really careful about how you're approaching, you know, people with your message, so that you're not bothering them. You know, you're getting their buy-in. You know, there's just a lot there that continue as well. So like the, you know.
Yeah. Well, it's like the how, again, the how changes. Mm-hmm. What doesn't change is like, okay, we're going to make someone feel positively about this brand, or we're going to make them trust our person who's talking about this. And then when they trust this person, they'll take that person's recommendation or whatever it is. So, you know, that all kind of remains the same, but yeah, you're right. We are a lot more skeptical. And so mm-hmm. the creative, the mode of how we do that changes. And I'm curious, this kind of leads into stuff that we're doing these days too. I'm curious, TikTok is just another one of those things. But I think again, it's how do we communicate and how do we engage, but in a way that again has changed because how it's being consumed has changed as well. Have you guys done much TikTok?
We have been exploring it. And we do it for a couple of clients. We do a lot of food work. So TikTok is really great for things like recipe and how-to content and those types of things. So that's a good fit. But yeah, I think, you know, you hit on something, right? I think like now more than ever, it's all about being authentic and real. And especially as like I talked about before, you know, you're talking about things like TikTok, who's the algorithm on there is just frightening. Like how, mm-hmm. like it is scary.
Good, right?
Yeah. I mean, how that platform knew who I was, like within 5 minutes of engaging with it, I was just like, mm-hmm. oh my God. But, yeah. You know, I think it is about connecting with people authentically, and with it, like when you're able to slice and dice, right? So really understanding that target audience and knowing what they connect with. But it's really about the storytelling is much less. I think in the old days it was all about problem solution, right? Like I have a problem. This product or service gives
scissors
me
are hard.
Yeah, exactly. Like that stuff.
Yeah. My favorite infomercial.
Yes. But now it's, you know, the storytelling has taken on a much more, and to me it's much more enjoyable to produce as well, because you're really able to, it's less about like telling a story and it's more about sharing a story and inviting engagement. And really giving people content that they care about, you know. For example, you know, I talked about recipe videos. You know, we're working on a project now, and it's a food product. And one of the things that, you know, of course, is important is to communicate all of the attributes of that specific product, right? Mm-hmm. But you can't just very well have somebody stand up and say, you should buy this because of X, Y, Z. You know, you've got to, you got to give people a little something in order to make it worth their while and show them. It's less about telling them and it's more about showing them. So again, we pull people in with engaging personalities, or trustworthy personalities too, and then give them, like in this case, recipe information or ways to actually use the product. And sure, we weave in why this particular product is what you want to use in order to achieve this, but it's about giving them something that they want. Rather, it's a lot less about telling and even less about selling. It's more about connecting, and the more authentic you can be, the better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I always think about that in terms of like engage, you know, we have to engage first. No one cares what you know until they know that you care. So we got to prove that we care, that we understand their needs and provide some engaging content for those needs. Because at the end of the day, before we make a lot of our purchasing decisions, unless there's that quick eye-catching thing you just click and you're like, oh shit, why did I purchase that? With that exception, we're going to look at the stats of something. We're going to see, you know, especially with food, we're going to check the nutrition on it. But a recommendation from a friend or an advertisement of somebody from somebody that we trust where they make an awesome sandwich with the cheese, you know, we're like, oh my gosh, that looks so good. I want that right now. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, I'm going to go look and see where can I get it? How much does it cost? What's it, you know, we'll eventually get to that information step. And so that's also a part of this marketing journey we can provide for them. But yeah, I feel like TikTok especially is just engage, engage, engage. But I think something you said earlier makes me think as well, like how the algorithm knows you so much. We are like filling out a survey where we give them an answer every 5 seconds. Every 5 seconds, we're going down the maze a little bit further and they can put us right into a spot that says, okay, you know, Ryan is a goofy guy, loves comedy. What else do I get on there? I get magic. I get like a lot of illusionists and things. So I get comedians, I get illusionists. I get a lot of weird technical nerdy stuff. And you know, that happened again, like you said, after 5 minutes or like after the first use, all of a sudden you're just getting relevant content. But it's interesting too, because I think that can make it more hard to appeal to general audiences, because a lot of times people come and they're like, we have to appeal to everyone. So what do you do when somebody comes and has that mentality of we need to be all things to all people?
Yeah, that's a good question, right? Like, and that's our biggest.
We want
challenge.
Everyone across the world in every channel, you know, to buy everything that we have.
Well, because what company doesn't want that for their product, you know, right, like right. It's who wants to like limit the net, you know, where they cast their net, like everybody wants everybody, you know. I think, how do you do that? I mean, I think that comes down to one of the most critical elements of success in any sort of relationship with a client. And that is that it's a partnership. It's really about that a client trusting that we know what we're doing, and understanding that, you know, we've done this multiple times before, and to trust us that we're going to make your dollar go further by, you know, not being all things to all people in all places, that you, because you simply can't be that, you know. It's just, the proposition gets a little easier, I think, when budgets are limited, because it's really easy to slice and dice up a budget and say, if you're going to be all things to all people, you need X amount of dollars, quite frankly. But when you've got a limited budget, you need to be a little bit more, you need to be a lot more thoughtful. We're thoughtful with all of our budgets, whether they're big or small, but, I think that's, it's really, if if someone's insisting that and that's what they want to do, you know, I think we're going to be real honest and say, I don't know that you can do that. Here's what we can do. And then we back it up with statistics and data and past successes to try to bring them along.
Yeah.
There are some clients out there that'll say, nope, I want to do all of these things and I want it. And it's like, at that point, you know, are we a good fit? Are we a great partner for each other? You know, because we're just going to be real honest and transparent. So that's kind of, you know, that's a little bit more business related than how we solve it creatively. Because I just don't think any creative is going to ever save the day when it's, you know, when you're trying to be all things to all people. It's just really, really, it's just a waste of money, essentially.
Well, things, you know, really have changed in the public experience of things. Like, I didn't really live in this time, but, you know, you hear a lot about the three-channel TV time. You know, it's like you had three channels. I had limited channels when we were growing up, but basically the whole point being that, like, there's less and less, like, shared national experience to pull from. So, like, you used to be able to kind of hit the nation with an ad that's like, how about that Elvis, huh? He was pretty, you know. But, like, if they don't know the reference that you're bringing to them, I mean, you know, you run into this with, like, Saturday Night Live. Like, there's a lot of skits that, like, they're all humorous, but, like, there's a lot of things I don't get these days because I'm like, I don't know what they're referencing. I haven't seen that movie. I haven't heard that song. What, you know? So because there's so much stuff out there, so you almost, it's almost like, you know, not possible is too strong. An incredible challenge to hit everybody, be all things for all people. Also, it's not really the wisest, like, strategy to use, because what does everybody share? You know, there's a few, you know, hopeful messages you can give just about being a human community, but we don't have a lot of, that's one of the things I think that is changing a lot.
I'm curious too, and it's great when we go down business as well, obviously, because we both run businesses and it's fun to talk about. I'm curious what kind of gets you up in the morning. You know, you've been with this, you know, you've been SMB, now your partner, you've been there for 17 years, now your partner. So there's something in this that you love, but what kind of gets you up in the morning that gets you excited?
Yeah. I mean, for me, there's rarely a day that goes by where there's not a new challenge that gets thrown at me. I mean, I couldn't imagine having the type of job where you go in every day and just, like, look at a spreadsheet and crunch numbers. But I know when I wake up every day, I think to myself, well, I wonder what kind of crazy thing is going to be thrown at me today. And honestly, those things can come from anywhere, but I would say 80% of the time they come from something that happens during my workday. And that's really what gets me up in the morning. Like, there is always something new. There is always some sort of impossible challenge or wrench, or it's continual problem solving and creative problem solving. And, you know, it can be anything from, you know, a new opportunity with a client. It can be, you know, solving interpersonal issues. It can be, it can be anything, but I think it's that ability to solve problems. And then ultimately, the things I get really excited about are the things where, you can make a difference. And whether that's, like, from an altruistic sense, you know, where you get to help people and make lives better, or from a business sense where you can help people achieve their business objectives. You know, it's that ability to just make things better for somebody. And this career path has given me the opportunity to do that. So that's it in a nutshell.
This is definitely the right place for that. 'Cause There's always something coming up, right?
Always.
We've also got Mindy, must be a friend of yours. You look fabulous and you're amazing. Thanks for jumping in. Yeah, I wore this shirt just for you. Oh, you're probably talking. Okay, you're talking about Emily. I get it. yeah, so I'm curious with that too. I was thinking today, because like I have a lot of big projects, and there's the idea of like working on the company, working in the company, and I feel like to some degree, we're all very scrappy, and so there's always going to be some degree of both. But you try to think of what can I do uniquely, and then everything else, like have other people help with. But working on these big projects, like for instance, the server, we bought a huge new server because terabytes of footage are just, you know, footage is just going up and up and up on projects, and we needed something. So we got that back in November. Probably took a month of troubleshooting, and then they're like, oh, we're going to send you a new one. There must be an electrical issue. So, you know, all those headaches. Just got it so in today. Go ahead.
Are you doing all that on your own, or do you have somebody come in and help you with that? Or,
well, I have their support team, right?
Okay.
So I'm kind of like, it's not necessarily basic labor, but it's very specific server technology stuff. Very specific to this product, very specific to our setup. So sure. They are out of Canada, so they don't send people to help. And we could hire like an impact or somebody, I think, to help. But the time that it takes me to get this done versus get them up to speed and then have them get it done, it's probably a lot less time for me to do it. So somewhat of a big project in that it takes like a day, but it's very important. Has to get done. And then, of course, I've got other projects, writing projects, creative projects, review projects, proposals. You know, those are always going around. And then something else happens, right? And something comes up and I got to work on that. And I was thinking today, I was like, how many of those should I reasonably take care of each day? And how many, you know, can I push back on in a sense of saying, okay, I know this just came up. This is going to get done tomorrow. Or this can get done next week. Because my initial thought is anytime somebody asks me something, I'm going to try to get it done as fast as I can. But then I'm doing an extra 10 or 15 things in a given day when I still got to get this proposal, this script done, this creative review, that work that was already scheduled for the day in. So long-winded way of asking, how do you handle that, your other tasks that you've put for the day? How do you manage that versus things that pop up?
Yeah. And it's really critical to figure out a way to manage it, right? Because, I mean, you could work 24 hours a day every day if you let yourself. Mm-hmm. There's always something that needs to be done. Yeah. No, I mean, I think that's a really good question. And I have actually been working really hard at being better about managing that really triaging things and, you know, figuring out the have to do now versus the nice to do now versus the things that can honestly wait. I'm the same way. Like, I want to get everything done. I want to get right away. If I say it's going to be, you know, Tuesday, I want it done Monday. It's just kind of how I am. But, you know, when you do that day in and day out and, you know, you got eventually you got nothing left to give, right? Especially when you're balancing some of those more administrative functions with creative functions. And when you are, you have to work that creative part and you're exhausted and you have nothing left to give. And like, you know, for me, if I'm not out, if I don't take the time to get out and experience the world in some way, shape, or form that's has nothing to do with work, I've got nothing left to give to my creative projects. So I have to make time for that. And so I've been better at making that a to-do thing just as important as, you know, the article I have to write or the script that I have to do or the piece I have to review, you know, like all of that. But I have been, you know, I know that there are ebbs and flows in the work that we do. We have some times where we're busy, you know, and working 14-hour days. And I have anxiety and I get up in the middle of the night and I feel like I need to get something done. And I know that those happen, but then you kind of have some times where things are a little bit more manageable. And what I've been doing is trying to really take advantage of those times, because I get really stressed out if I wasn't super busy all the time, and just kind of taking time to organize and reflect and take that time. I do find that we'll go through times where you do have to do it all, but then being really conscious of the times where things can wait and things can be set aside. Another thing that I've been doing lately that's really helped is I would also want to respond to everyone right away. And so now we have email, we have Slack. We used to have Skype too, but we got rid of that. You've got all of your social platforms with a messaging function on them, not to mention just text. I've gotten really good at helping maximize my time that I give to things by shutting all that stuff off.
Maybe high five for that.
Yeah. And it's something I just started doing, you know, over the last few months. And being like, I found that constant interruption was taking away my focus, and things were taking three times longer, four times longer than they would if I could just dedicate myself to them. So I've done that. And, you know, sometimes I'll turn things back on and I have like eight urgent text messages or something. And then I follow up and it, like, it wasn't even urgent at all. Like, it was fine. I have not had one instance of that since I started doing that, where something fell through the cracks that I really needed to be present for. So, so that's kind of one of my management techniques, you know, and I think it's something that comes with, you know, I think age, I mean, and experience too. I think you get better at sort of, it's easy for me to say as I look back on, you know, like, I'm closer to retirement now than I was to, like, I've kind of like went over
every
that
day.
So I think that, and now I know the things I have the knowledge and the experience to be able to know how to triage appropriately. It's not about saying no or to people or saying later. It's saying, you know, how about we do this, you know, and how about we schedule some time here? And again, I've never had an issue with somebody being like, no, I need it right now, when you kind of approach it that way. So those are some of the things I'm doing now. They are working right now, but come back to me when we're back to the 14-hour day work cycle, and I'll let you know, you know how it's going.
I was going to ask how, or maybe make a connection to the authenticity piece. I mean, that's what you're trying to achieve in your marketing, but really, like, it starts to seep in everywhere. You really need to start following that in order to have success, because, you know, you can take, you can be an order taker and just like take every single thing that comes in and every single, you know, lead that comes in, and they say, this is what we want to do. And then you just say, okay, yeah, great. We'll tell that message and whatever. And then before you know it, you find that you're not being authentic at all, because you're telling stories that you don't think are effective. You don't think that they're the most effective for that client, actually. So you have to like push back on them. It takes a little while to like learn. Some clients don't like that. So they just want what they want. But when you really find the ones that are the right fit, that are the partner, like, there should be good give and take, where it's like, well, I might disagree with you, but it's not because I don't like you or because I'm not like going to work hard for you. It's because I actually want you to succeed, and I have this idea that I think is going to be the best way. It takes a tremendous effort to make that happen.
I love the whispering, by the way.
So what's happening here?
Right off camera is like five children.
There's a lot of cooking happening right now. There's a chef. He keeps bringing this one. This might be ice cream or something. And then
super cute.
What I have here? I got an entire cake right here too.
Wow, so, that looks amazing.
Yeah.
You brought a cake to a happy hour and you didn't even share it?
Yeah, ice cream.
ice cream with the cake. That makes sense. What you were saying too, Emily, I think I got a little bit older now that it's 2022, because that's a thing that I reminded myself of being distracted, because I want, maybe last year, I kind of got into a bad groove of like, okay, somebody sends me a message. Let's get it done. Let's get it off the task list. Let's, you know, okay. And like that, was it endorphin, the hit? Is that the chemical in our brain? Endorphins? Endorphin? Come on. What is it?
Well, I mean, keep going and I'll let you know.
Yeah. You know, bing comes up. Ooh, let me go check what that is. So you get like a little bit of a, you know, hit. It's like the new
drug.
It's
more like it's like that insulin rush that makes you just go, right? Like you just go.
Well, and it's, you know, you want that feeling of, ooh, something new.
So I would, getting something done.
Yeah. Oh, well, like, and that's even better. Right.
Test done. Yeah.
Well, and so I would be like, okay, I'm, you know, instead of just sitting and continuing to think about a creative idea that I'm working on writing or whatever, I'd come to a roadblock and be like, okay, let me go check email. Oh, I got some emails. Mm-hmm. Let me do that. Oh, let me go check Slack. Okay. Now I'm going to check Slack and I do that. Oh, look, I got a text. Let me do that. You know, and I'm getting like these little, you know, chemical pings, ping, 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 ping.
Yep.
But then it blows up my creative, right? Kind of like you said, it takes three times longer. So I was realizing too, at home, just putting down the phone, right? Coming home, putting it down, just being present. It's going to be there. And if somebody needs to get in contact with me, they're going to get in contact with me anyway. So I don't need to be ignoring my family for my phone when I'm at home. So then I started thinking about that mentality again at work. And one of the email apps I use called Spark, they came up with this new philosophy where when you have scheduled times, you're going to check your email, you get in. And then when it's not those times, it just gives you like a nice photo of nature. You know, let me see if I can share this. And I haven't checked it since 10 o'clock. So I need to check it, but it basically you're timing your communications. So let's see if I can.
Well, and I feel like it's all part of this while you're looking for that. We're seeing this cultural shift, right? Like it's everywhere. For so long, we've been this culture of busyness, right? Oh, look at that. Doesn't that look nice? I'd like to go there right now.
And I'm not like, ooh, I got to check. I see I got an email from Emily. What does she need? Let me help her.
Yeah.
You just get this until it's 1 o'clock. And then when it's 1 o'clock, then I can jump in and check out the thing. And it doesn't make me get things done slower. Like I feel like I get them done maybe at the same speed, maybe faster, probably better.
Better quality for sure.
Yeah. Better quality.
Yeah. I think we're just really kind of with everything that happened with COVID, we're seeing this shift from, we used to glorify busyness, right? Like that was being busy was a badge of honor.
Right.
And you know, it's this hustle culture, right? Like it was all about like, go, go, go.
I mean, that's like, still around like hustlers club.
You know, but I feel like there's a shift, you know, happening away from that. And it's a lot less about, you know, this hustle culture busy and this hustle culture, more of being mindful and a mindfulness and really being thoughtful about how you spend your time. And even if that time is work time and getting work done, being a little bit more focused and giving it your all rather than trying to do five things at once. And, you know, I just, you know, with everybody's a little bit more focused on their mental health. And I think like that's all part of it. And I think it'll be interesting to see the shift continue to manifest itself. If my observation is correct, to see it, how it'll affect, you know, especially those of us who work in a client service industry where we're used to like somebody says jump and you just jump, right? Like, is that going to change anything? You know, it'll be interesting to see.
Yeah, I'm very curious too. You know, obviously some of this has come because of COVID over the last several years. There was a lot of mental health concerns on the rise and issues. And so, it became very clear how important, and maybe for bigger organizations, I feel like with smaller organizations, we already understood it when, oops, I'm getting an echo there. Is that you, John?
Oh, could be. Sorry.
Sorry. With smaller organizations, we kind of had the sense of, yeah, we need to do nice things for the people and take care of them and make sure they have a good environment and make sure they take time away. Like I had to remind the team a few weeks ago, like, hey, we're cranking and we're working really hard and we appreciate that. Make sure, you know, you grab an hour in a random week and do something fun, or, you know, go learn something completely, or just whatever it is, just do something, be away, kind of that idea of taking that other time. Because if you're not in the world or if you're not doing other things, our perspective just becomes so, it's an echo chamber, and there's no new input to make us better and what we do better. So we're not going to change, and we're going to start kind of eating our own tail to some degree in that metaphor. So I think that's all very important.
Well, yeah. I was also going to, I don't know what analogy I was going to give, but the comparison or a connection that I was going to make that I feel often in this, it's kind of related to the authenticity thing, is, you know, at what point do we, people working in marketing feel somewhat responsible sometimes. I'm like, well, it's because of the promises that have been given to us through marketing. They're like, you know, they've been marketed like, look, this is going to help you stay connected with your family and friends. And it doesn't. And it's worked the inverse. And like, oh, and if you, you know, this, get this app, it's going to, in the case of your email app, Ryan, that sounds good, that philosophy. But a lot of times,
also,
this productivity app.
That's a beta image, and I should not have shown that, but we're not going to get in trouble.
This productivity app is going to make you more productive. And then it's actually, you know, at times, like, those things are like counterproductive, because they're like, how can you like juggle all the things even more than you have been doing? Which is like, well, that actually was the problem in the first place. And so then it's where I'm making that connection is often, I feel like in creative, in my struggle to be authentic with clients and stuff, a lot of times I'm like, oh, should I be trying to sell people this idea, or, you know, whatever this thing is? Because we don't need everything that we think we need. I mean, the products are nice and you know, but maybe to end it on a hope, my rambling on a hopeful note, those projects that mean something, they become really special, because then you're like, finally a thing that I can really authentically dive into and be like, this is worth it doing.
Yeah. And to that point, I mean, is there anything maybe over the last year that you're especially proud of, Emily? It could be personal too. You know, it doesn't have to be a project within the business. It could just be something in your life.
You know, I think one of the things, I'm most proud of, and we worked with you guys on some of this, is some of the virtual events that we did. That was, you know, it was something that was intended to be live and in person. We had to pivot. We had to put things together quickly. You know, taking what was supposed to be a live event and making it interesting virtually and tell those stories and make those authentic connections with a big group of people digitally, I'm really proud of what we were able to accomplish, you know, in that kind of new format. You know, the whole thing about, you know, does this thing really help me connect better? You know, I think technology has a tendency to help us stay in touch, you know, but not connect. You know, you don't get that, like, here we go. Like, authenticity is the name of the game today, I think. But it's about, like, it's not about those authentic connections. You're not really going deep. You're not really interacting, you know. But, and I see this a lot with, you know, remote collaboration too. Like, it's really great for transactional things. But if you're really wanting to get deep, whether it's, you know, coming up with great creative or making deep interpersonal connections, you know, it's really hard to leverage technology to make those really, really deep and meaningful connections. But I think that the work that we did in taking some of these virtual events and bringing them to people, I think we were able to make meaningful connections. And I think we discovered ways to use the platform that were engaging, entertaining, and then also meaningful. So I think that those projects were some of my favorite. The other part of those projects that I really liked, not only was the output and the end result really great, and I'm really proud of what we did, you know, creatively and executionally and everything else, is working together with other people in order to make these things happen and collaboration. And I mean, maybe it was coming off of, you know, everybody working from home so much, and we actually got to like be in a room with people and problem solve and bounce ideas off of each other. But, you know, again, it's one of the things you asked about what makes me excited. It's about being able to work with a group of people and having, you know, having a plan and knowing what we're going to do, but then collaborating to make it better or to solve problems that come up, which ultimately make things better. I'm really proud of how, you know, different people from different backgrounds have been able to think differently and do something different. That's really exciting to me. So I think those projects were the things that I was the most proud of. I think the other thing that I'm really proud of was the work that, you know, my team did to get us to this new space and navigate us here, build it out and put it together, you know, during a pandemic. You know, on top of our regular jobs, it was a huge project and a huge undertaking. It was a lot of work. And it's really exceeded all of our dreams for what this space could be. So those are
that's exciting.
A few things that I'm really proud of. And as you know, you kind of look back at the year, you know, what was the most fun and what was the most rewarding? Like, those are the things that come to mind.
I remember too, I was sharing those projects as well. I was like, oh my gosh, you guys got to sign up and tune in and get into this stuff. Because I had such a blast on it, you know,
they were fun. We spent some time, we had that live cooking demo with the three cameras and doing all of the switching behind the scenes. And that was it was a lot. It was, it's basically doing a live TV show is what we did, you know? And then it was great. But on top of having a live TV show, you know, we were bringing in people virtually, you know, it was like live TV plus. So super fun.
Right. Well, and it's great. So again, kind of maybe coming back down to technology, like it's great what technology has enabled us to do. But I also feel like kind of like you're saying too, it can get in the way of our connecting a lot. And I think right now there's kind of a wave of things. And right now we're a little over technology, like too much technology, and it can sometimes get in the way. And I even doing this show, like my biggest complaint is like, we just don't have that energy of like, you're saying something and then, ooh, I jump in and then, I continue saying something, then you jump in or John jumps in. And, you know, we lose a little bit of that energy because there's a slight delay and it's always like we kind of have this philosophy of like, okay, well, I'm going to wait until they finish their idea. And then, okay, now can I come in? Cause you don't want to do like, you go, technology is limiting in this regard. So I absolutely feel that, but yeah, I love, you know, some of my favorite clients, come in and we hang out and we have a drink and we talk creatively and, you know, share life together in that aspect, which we try to do with tools, we try to do with technology, and it gets us further when we can't be in person, but it's just not the same.
It's not the same. Something about a screen gets in the way of a connection. like you said, you can still have a connection, but it's so much deeper and so much better when you can just be humans, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like it. Let's be humans together. Mm-hmm, let's see. We've got Marky. Is that right?
Oh, yeah, Marky.
Marky Fox. Great listen, hey, all. Very lucky to be able to work with Emily daily and collaborate with you along the way. Nice.
Yeah, Marky's one of my partners here at the agency.
Oh, very cool.
One of the hardest working people I know.
Nice. Yeah, so how does that work? You're a partner. How did you become a partner?
The previous partners kind of thought about where the future of the agency needed to go and what direction it needed to head, and approached us and said, "Hey, are you interested in this opportunity?" And a group of us, you know, we all jumped in. There are four of us from, and we all represent a different discipline. I'm obviously from creative. Marky is leads our account service team. Megan leads our PR team. And then Paul is our controller. So we've got, mm-hmm. you know, the PR, the client service, the creative, and then the money guy. Like, we're all together. And
yeah, so you kind of have your silos, but then as a partnership, you have maybe not a formal board, but you have you guys who come together to make decisions, larger decisions.
We do. It's interesting you say that. One of the things that we've been really working hard to, you know, as we shape the future of the agency, because you said, say silos, and yeah, we represent those disciplines. But we're trying really hard to break down those traditional agency silos. Like, it is really mm-hmm. part of our mission moving forward. And so while I lead our creative team, we're opening everybody up to the process. I think, you know, strategy typically was an account service thing. And I sit on pretty much every strategy team, you know, bringing people together. You know, in all parts of the process, we've found makes things so much better. I mean, maybe we'll evolve someday to not having any teams at all, and we're just one team. You know, I think mm-hmm. that it makes it hard to grow when you're like that, because it's just easier to manage. But maybe there's a solution there. But since we've done that, the results have been phenomenal. The quality of our work has changed dramatically. I think the old agency model of, you know, account service talks to a client, gets a project, puts together a CSB, hands it down to creative executes it, account service, like that, it's like a factory mentality, right? It's not, it's not conducive. It's just like an assembly line, you know, it's not conducive to great creative thought. And I, you know, as a
How often would you have like, you sold what for what?
Yeah.
You know, how are we supposed to do this for that? Or, you know, why are we doing this?
Like, that's an age old issue, right? Like, account service versus creative. Like, well, how do you break that down? You're all together at the table at all points in the process, and you're a team all of a sudden, right? Mm-hmm. That's been actually really great. And when we built out this new space, we kind of had that in mind. It's a lot more open. We have a lot of collaboration spaces. You know, not everybody likes the open office environment, you know, and they think, you know, but what we find is that people can pick up on things that are happening, and you're either informed or you hear something that you can contribute to. And we've had lots of cases where, you know, somebody was grappling with a problem that somebody overheard and said, "Hey, I did this once before, and this is what I did." And it's like, boom, problem solved. So instead of spinning, trying to figure out what you're going to do, we're able to get there faster and better. So
I love that too, because just by the virtue of how we started, John and I just pitched everything and pitched creative, and then did budgeting, and so we were account services or account rep, and then we went right into creative. Well, then we brought a partner on to do business, and I think for both of us, John and I were like, okay, now we don't have to do that anymore, we're just going to do creative. But we never went down that route, because for us, we always were involved, and essentially what we do is Scott, our director of business, and the third partner, he'll grab me or John, or, you know, John and I will decide when a project comes in, okay, I'm going to take lead, you take lead. And we do that initial meeting with Scott, who kind of comes from the business perspective of it. And we work with it and the client. And then when it's appropriate, we bring in the team members too, who are going to work on the project, because that was something that we learned maybe more kind of with our editing department, because they were a little more siloed. We're like, all right, we did it. We got the job. We wrote it. We filmed it. We have it. Here you go. And then it's a little late for some of their feedback, and mm-hmm. that can create an issue, and it can create worse products. So we found, like you're saying, that it's very important at a certain stage in that creative to make sure we bring everyone in on the team and be like, hey, anybody else have any ideas? Like, okay, great. Thanks for sharing. Yeah, we're going to decide. We'll figure out what's going to work best, but you've had that input. You've heard the constraints we have on this project. Like, hey, we want to work with this client. They need to get something done for $5,000. So instead of complaining that we don't have enough budget to do what we want to do, let's problem solve and come up with something really creative to fit within that $5,000, because
right. Yeah,
they're going to have another budget come July where we can do more. So mm-hmm. it's worth it for us to really kind of give. And then they get that reasoning. That's like love and logic, you know, with children. That reasoning can be very helpful, and then they can get behind that. Okay, we're gonna outwork this a little bit, and it's a little under budget, but we are in this together, as opposed to, you know, a silo being handed down in a factory. Like, I don't care what you think, just do it.
Yeah, and the benefits of that, you know, making everyone feel that they're included and part of the overall thing, you know, I mean, that just, yes, like, to your point, they're invested. We're all invested, right? It's not just completing an assignment. It's you're invested in doing something really great. I think the other thing that helps with is that game of telephone that you sometimes get, you know, and if somebody's handling one part of it and then handing the information down, inevitably that person is making interpretations that make sense to you. Or that makes sense to them.
Right.
But if you were in that meeting and heard the same person say the same thing, you might take something totally different from it. Something mm-hmm. that could be the difference between a really great idea or just an idea that checks all of the boxes on this CSB that you got handed mm-hmm. to you. You know, it's just those little... In creative, it's those little tidbits. It's those little things that you hear. It's the psychology of sitting across the table from somebody and asking them a question and then seeing like pain on their face. You know, like those types of things are some of the most valuable interactions in helping somebody solve a problem creatively than anything, you know, and you miss that if not everyone's at the table to hear it firsthand. So yeah, it's the bringing everybody in so they're invested, but it's also, you know, avoiding communication hiccups, essentially.
Mm-hmm. And you'll have to describe that too, that word CSB. We don't have the Sorry. Agency background to know what Sorry. That is. That's okay.
CSB is it's a creative strategy brief. So essentially what it does is it outlines the nuts and bolts of a project, who the client is, what their points of differentiation are, what the target audience is, what we're executing, some of the key mandatories that need to be. It's very left brain. It's very mm-hmm. like the nuts and bolts. These are the things we need to do and what we need to accomplish.
Yeah.
Thank you for making me clarify that. I am getting a little into my
the way you say it, Ryan, you just say like some of our viewers, they might not know what.
Yeah, I was going to be like, some people might not. I totally know, but other people might not know. I didn't know if I could make the joke work. So I just asked honestly.
Yes. So sorry about that. So that's what that is, but it's the nuts and bolts. It's not the heart and soul. And in order to do creative, you got to get to the heart and soul.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I think. I don't know.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Yeah. Well, and it's different, depending on who's looking at it as well. You mm-hmm. know, like you said, so we can include different people, and that's been a difficult thing for me, but I'm working on it. I've grown a lot, is control creatively where John and I have worked together for years, but we had to figure out, okay, how do we come when we're both, we co-direct a lot when we're doing that, how do we resolve an issue quickly and to the best way on set? Okay. Well, for each of these projects, even though we're co-directing, one person's going to be the lead. So if the non-lead disagrees, then you can still have that disagreement. But at the end of the day, the decision will just quickly be made by the lead on that. And now we're bringing more people in. So it's been interesting. I'm like trying to flex that muscle of like, okay, I wouldn't do it that way, but I'm not doing it. So I'll continue to provide my feedback, but let's see kind of where this goes. And that's been fun because now it's more than just me and John. We've got Max, who's a great editor, but also just writer, producer. So that's a fun thing I've been working on as well.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. So John, you can go ahead, and then we're going to do a little thing we do every week, but I'm not going to hit the video yet.
I was just going to add on to that and just say, yeah, the learning that working as a group doesn't equal group consensus. You know, it doesn't have to be and for a while, I think early on, we probably tried too hard to hit that group consensus on every, you know, creative idea. And then it just takes longer. It's very challenging to get there. And instead to be like, okay, well, we can be collaborative, but then somebody still has to like, somebody can still give the final yes or no. I mean, that makes sense. But I think we were going too far in the other direction because we were
striving. I know, we so have hard. To convince each other.
We were striving so hard not to have, you know, somebody at the top just calling the shots that it was like, okay, well, I can't get the room of five people to all see the same vision. And so we're still here meeting about it.
Yeah. Cool. So it's about 1:20. We do like to honor our 1:30 time frame. It sucks though, because I feel like we're just getting into the good stuff, and hour two is where we really, you know, start to hang out, but maybe we'll change that format later. We'll have you back and we'll just start right here. We'll just start with this energy. But we're going to do a little thing that we do every week.
This feels is a lie.
Oh, it's the cutest thing ever. It's my children.
That's adorable.
Yeah, I got it. Actually, it's one of my children. Just had it recorded several times. So we're going to play Two Truths and a Lie. I did prep Emily in the beginning so she could come up with some of those, thinking we might run as far as we are. So we'll just have Emily tell her story. John and I have done this 80 times. We're running out of stories, so it's more fun too when we just get the stories from the guests. So
you
we're going to play
this.
You
guys have done it 80 times? Like, oh my gosh.
I think it's
like,
pretty close to that. Yeah.
I have a hard time doing it once, but I'm impressed.
We've also gotten really good with it. The trick for us is to try and confuse each other. So I think I've only gotten John twice out of those, maybe 80 times, but he gets me maybe half the time. So
I don't even know 80 facts about myself. That's the challenge.
Yeah, you'd have to know 160, and then you just make up another 80, right? That's how the math works, science. So for those who are watching, Emily's going to tell us three stories. Two of them are going to be true. How do I do that? Go to two. Two of them is going to be true.
If you're European, one of them or is. If you're American.
No, yeah. I went to the bathroom before, so I'm not a PM. she's going to tell us three stories. Thank you. I appreciate the laugh for the dad joke. Two of them are true. One of them is not. We have to guess which one is not. And if you're playing at home, you guess. If you get it right, we'll send you some swag. So it is a happy hour. So we've got some of these. We'll make sure you get some of these as well. You can always turn them over if, you know, you don't want to show another agency brand on your desk, but maybe we should do that. We should just make them rad on one side and then brand it on the other. So people could always turn them over. Cause I got something for Christmas from somebody I know at an agency, not here. And I'm like, I don't want that agency thing on my desk. I want my crap on my desk. So,
or you just wear it like a band, you know, like we should go around.
I'm like, they're okay.
We should go around wearing other agencies. Be like, Bands are always like, like as a band,
it's
like,
so punk. Yeah.
You can't rock and roll. Yeah.
Somewhere along the line, you guys gave me one of your hats. I wear it like a trucker hat. I wear that all the time.
Yeah, we'll have to give you one of these too.
Yeah,
I'd wear some S&B swag.
Yeah,
me too. Yeah, I mean, our new logo is pretty banging, so I
Yeah. Yeah, I love it. And is that the S/B?
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah, I'm trying to think if it's different. Have anything here.
That's something too that, yeah, yep.
Anyway.
I like that elegant and modern.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Cool. So that's all my preamble here.
Oh God, now I have to expose myself, huh?
Yeah.
Vulnerability in action. Here we go. All right. Two truths and a lie. I average about 25 books a year that I read. I once did shots in a bar with Adam Sandler. And I love to be outdoors to connect with nature as a way to recharge myself.
All right. So we've got average of 25 books a year. Once did shots at a bar with Adam Sandler. Love to be outdoors to connect with nature as a way to recharge yourself. Mm-hmm, I think I've got a guess, but what do you got, John? And for you watching at home.
Tricky. These are tricky. All right. So let's work this problem. So Adam Sandler sounds, you know, really out there, but it's like one of those unique things that, you know, it's like one of those things it's hard to come up with a lie for. Like, right. Why would you just pick
to that make that as a lie? Yeah.
And whatever. But maybe there's some other celebrity that could be the lie.
Yep.
I mean, how would I know how many books you read? But let's see, 25. That doesn't divide evenly into 52 weeks. So that's like the math there is messed up. I'm going to go with the books. I know that you go out and about to clear your mind because you talked about going to get coffee and how nice that was. So 25 books.
Yeah.
It's got to be, I'm going with 52.
All right. Average of 25 books a year. You could lie. You could be like 26, right? That's the name of the game. But I don't know that that's it. And like John said, you could have once done shots at a bar with, I don't know, Leonardo DiCaprio. You could have picked anybody else. We would have no idea. But Sam, I would love to believe that is true. I would love to believe that you've done shots with Adam. I'm like a doppelganger. I can be when I have like curly hair, I can be a doppelganger with Adam and what's the dude from SNL? Andy Samberg.
Yeah.
My Jewish doppelgangers.
You're like a nice cross between the two. Now that you mentioned that. Yeah, totally.
I would love to be in a spoof. So Adam, if you're watching, love to be outdoors to connect with nature as a way to recharge yourself. I'm trying to think about that. Cause yeah, you said you do like to get away. And I'm trying to think back now specifically if you said anything about like outdoors or nature, because that sounds like a very specific, like maybe it's one of those things like, yeah, everyone knows that I don't love to be in nature. that would be a really fun way to lie. So I'm going to guess that one, that you love to be outdoors to connect with nature as a way to recharge. And anybody, we got a handful of viewers as well. Put your guesses in. If you guys guess correctly, we'll send you crap as well. Stuff, cool stuff.
We have the answer though.
You got to guess. Yeah. that's not how question answer works. You can't be told the answer. So I'll give you like 30 seconds. Let's see. Do you remember the bar? This is just more questioning. The bar that you had a shot with Adam Sandler at.
I mean, isn't this like you're getting closer to more accurate. I think this is cheating.
It's our game. I do what I want.
The more details you have, the more intel you have. Maybe I worded these. yeah. I mean, it's your game. I'm happy to answer any questions you have. I can.
Yeah,
say.
I've already made my guess. I'm just vamping for the people.
What are the 25 books that you read this year?
The 25 books that I well, it would have been for last year.
No, you like to knock it out in the first 10 days. All right. No one else is guessing at home. Thanks, people.
Yeah. Thanks, that's guys.
I'm right.
They're stumped. All right. Are you ready? Should I do my reveal? Yeah.
Let's do it. Let's get the reveal.
One of you is right with my lie. It was a bit of a tricky lie, but I do not average 25 books a year. I try to read 25 books a year. Which is a modest amount. I mean, I know people who read like 80 books a year, and I'm like so impressed. Do somebody guessed? The second one is
there. We go.
It's the first one. I try to read, and I do come out usually in January. I read a lot, but then as things get busier with work, I fall off. My goal is always 25 books. I have yet to be 18. Which is really sad. And I really do need to read more because the more I read, the better writer I am. I mean, it's just extraordinary what a difference I make. Like if I go a week and I haven't read anything, my writing just tanks. Like I just need to be. So I only read I have not beat 18. That's pretty sad.
How long have you had this goal?
Like, I don't know, a handful of years, like 5 years maybe. Mm-hmm.
What are you reading right now?
I just finished a book called The Giver of Stars. Oh. I don't know if you've heard of it, The Giver of Stars. It was a really great book. It's about it's about a group of women in the Depression era in Kentucky who start a pack horse library. So they deliver books out into, the Appalachian Mountains to people who don't have access to books.
Oh wow!
But it's based on a real thing, but then it's all made up. But I usually try to read some sort of make me a better person type of book.
Yeah,
I usually have two things going at once. So
yep.
I've got a few of those going right now. The one I have that I'm into right now is this Daring Greatly by Brené Brown, which is all about vulnerability, which is what I'm doing today with this Two Truths and a Lie.
Nice.
That means I have had shots in a bar with Adam Sandler, and I do use nature as a way to reconnect and focus. So those are both true stories.
So where was the Adam Sandler experience?
It was, have you guys lived in Madison like forever?
I've lived here longer than I've lived anywhere else. I've been here since 2003.
So in the early 90s, this is the early 90s, there's Buck's Bar like over by the Kohl Center right now, but there used to be one that was downtown, I think on Hamilton Street, Buck's. It was at that bar after a show that he had here in town, probably in like 93-ish, 92, 93-ish, 94-ish. Dude,
that's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. And Chris Farley was there too. And it was a really fun night. So, yeah.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. That's one of the only times I'll be like, it's too bad you didn't have a cell phone with photos you could have taken.
I know. It would have been totally different. But the interesting thing about it is it all just kind of happened naturally in our I feel like if there would have been photos, it would have been weird and staged and not been this. Authentic interaction like you could have before everything was
you're just in the moment, you're there
in the moment. Good times.
Awesome.
I also to the book goal, which is that's quite an amazing goal. You have a friend who has encouraged me and many people that have talked about this that any book that you read, any quality book, can be fiction, can also make you a better person. So there's a lot of books that are like, this will make you a better person. But if you want to read Count of Monte Cristo, you're probably going to be a better person after you're done reading it. And so there's a lot of value, I think, in the,
I'm a huge proponent of fiction as a way to look at yourself through a different lens.
Yeah.
Especially like sci-fi Orson Scott Card. But I come down here too.
Yeah.
Talent is overrated. Yeah. This one is awesome. It's like, hey, the most amazing people at any given thing that you know, they're not just magical. You know, they started when they were three and have practiced hours a day since they were three. So let that be your guide to excellence.
Yeah. No, I agree 100%. Cool. Anything you can read has the power to change your perspective and make you open to new things. It's so valuable. So maybe this is the year I reach 25. I'll keep you posted. Yeah. So.
Yeah, let's do it. Just read some smaller books too. You know, that'll
probably maybe. Help. Maybe.
Like children's like card books.
Yes. Okay, that'll get there. I'll be there by the end of the day. Just you wait.
To that example, don't read Count of Monte Cristo. It's not going to help you get to 25. I think it's like five books by itself.
All right.
Noted. So it is 1:30. I do want to respect your time and everybody's time at home. So thank you so much for joining us and playing and just being silly with us. Is there anything you want to promote? We can check you out, check out your work at your website. Let's see. You want to tell me that real quick? I'll get that in
the graphic. StephanBrady.com is our website. Come and see our new space. And, you know, if you come by on Friday afternoon at about 4, that's when our happy hour usually starts. So come and have a drink. Yeah. We have plenty of alcoholic and non-alcoholic options available. We kind of use that time to kick back and celebrate all of our accomplishments for the week and rest before the new week ahead. So, come and see us.
Nice. And can people see any of the dairy farmer stuff online somewhere?
Yeah, we're actually working on getting that on our website very shortly here. In fact, before this, we had a meeting. That's the latest case study that we'll get up there. So yeah, we'll have the events we produced with you, our late night talk show that we did in your studio space, which was so awesome. As well as the cooking demo we had with Joe Fuan, the winner of Top Chef. Will be on there. And then a bunch of other events that we did as well. So yeah, that should be coming within the next few weeks. So check back often.
Oops, caption. Awesome. Well, thanks again for hanging out with us and we'll have you back on. We'll schedule right away and we'll just start right here. Now we're getting into the good stuff. I want to hear how you connect with nature. What you're reading, you know, really dig into it. Yeah.
All right. It'll be like therapy for me. It'll be great.
I mean, that's how it started. It started with us like hanging out with people like clients and coworkers and colleagues that we couldn't hang out with during COVID. So
yeah,
that's kind of where this came. And now we can just hang out with anyone anywhere. So
love it.
It's very cool.
Well, it was a pleasure hanging out with you guys. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. And thanks everyone for tuning in. This also becomes a podcast, so you can check it out down below, or Spotify, Google, Apple, wherever your podcasts are sold. We're there. So check it out. This probably won't be in the mix for months yet. We have a back catalog that we just started putting in the podcast. So if you go into the podcast, you're actually kind of time traveling. You'll get something from a year ago, year and a half ago. So that's really, really fun. So that's what we got. Thanks everyone for tuning in. Thanks, Emily. Thanks, John. And we'll see you next time.